Hey everybody, let's take a look at John chapter 8, starting in verse 48. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death." The Jews said to him, "Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets. Yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died, and the prophets died? Who do you make yourself out to be?" Jesus answered, "If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, he is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad." So the Jews said to him, "You are not 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." So they picked up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. So this is a great passage to complement our reading through Matthew because it centers on the conflict that Jesus has with the Jewish leadership in Jerusalem. And it really comes to a head when they desire to put him to death by stoning him. So there's a number of things I'd like to draw out of the passage. The first is they insult him by saying, "You're a Samaritan and you have a demon." And it's interesting, first of all, to note how much they hate the Samaritans, that that would be an insult that they use. And it's also interesting to note that Jesus denies having a demon, but he doesn't deny being a Samaritan. In other words, I think he's happy to identify with the Samaritans. After all, remember in John chapter 4, he speaks with a Samaritan woman and spends time in a Samaritan city. He tells the parable of the Good Samaritan. In fact, he is the embodiment of the Good Samaritan. So in many ways, Jesus is the personal fulfillment of that scriptural promise that anywhere in the world, that anyone who does what pleases God is accepted by him. So I really appreciate Jesus identifying with the Samaritans, whom they use as an insult. And then there's this other theme of glory. Jesus says, "Look, I don't seek my own glory. I seek my Father's glory." And then he says, "But my Father seeks to glorify me." So we get another beautiful picture of the relationship of the Father and Son and the Holy Spirit. It is what I like to call a mutual glorification society. The Father desires the Son to be glorified and works for that glory. And the Son seeks to glorify the Father. Now, I believe that God made all of us to have a desire in our hearts for glory, for praise. Obviously, the desire for praise can go wrong, and often does. It goes wrong usually when we desire praise from the wrong people at the wrong time. But Jesus teaches us that that desire is right and that we should seek it from God. He is the judge of who deserves praise. And Jesus is so powerful and serene and calm because he is absolutely free from the need to self-justify, to prove, to guard his own reputation. He's so calm because he knows the Father's love, and he can trust that the Father will see fit to secure Jesus, who Jesus is before other people, in his good time. And that is what frees him to be able to do what he's doing. And of course, this leadership that is opposing him doesn't see it. Then I'm going to draw our attention to this phrase. Jesus says, "If anyone keeps my word," keeps my unique word. This is just generally Jesus teaching in general, that he is from the Father, that he is the true vine. Jesus says that whoever keeps his word would not see death. Now, it's an interesting phrase, and a lot of people have pointed out its uniqueness, see death. What seems to be going on here? I think what's going on here is Jesus is saying, "Look, I came that you might have life and have it more abundantly." In John chapter 15, Jesus says, "I speak these things to you that you might have joy and that your joy might be full." I think Jesus is saying that if we seek through the grace that God gives us to live and put into practice Jesus' teachings, death won't be something we notice. It won't register on our radar. I don't believe Jesus is here saying his followers won't die. All right, many of them do die. Of course, we believe in the resurrection, but here, I think Jesus is saying the human race lives in fear of death and lives to guard themselves and protect themselves at all costs from whatever might kill them. And this is particularly fitting in our day with the issues with the coronavirus. But Jesus is saying, if you will simply abide in my love and seek to live that out and pass that on, death is not something that will trouble you. And when it comes, you'll hardly notice. That is the testimony. That is the story of many saints who have died. We hear them passing into death almost as if it was a relief, almost as if it was a joy, not something they notice. And I think that is what Jesus is trying to get at in this passage. Well, within this dialogue, the Pharisees or the leaders in Jerusalem come to a really crucial question. They say, wait, who do you make yourself out to be? And Jesus could almost say, finally, you're asking the right question. All right, finally, you're getting to the point. You see what it is that I'm saying about myself. And of course, it all culminates. First of all, they mention Abraham. He mentions Abraham. And he says this curious thing that Abraham rejoiced that he saw my day, that Abraham looked forward to seeing it and he saw it. And I believe this speaks to many of the things that happened in Abraham's life. I mean, we could start with the call of Abraham. Abraham, follow me. I will bless you. I'll make your name great. And I will bless every nation through you. I believe that in Abraham's walk with God, God gave him glimpses of things to come, like the blessing of every nation. He saw that. The various times that God visits him throughout Genesis 12 to 22, I think we see little glimpses of Abraham seeing the purposes of God being fulfilled one day in Jesus. He may not know, we don't know the details that Abraham knew, but he trusted God that God was doing something in history, in time, to deal with the consequences of sin. And he rejoiced that he had a part to play in that. He rejoiced that he could in some way fit into that. And I believe, you know, there's something about the laughter. Remember when the promise that Sarah would have Isaac came, there was laughter. I think there's this deep laughter at the heart of things, that somehow God is going to gather a whole family of children, not by the power of human virility, but by the power of grace and by the power of receiving the goodness of God that comes in Jesus Christ. I believe Abraham touched on that and rejoiced in that. Indeed, he laughed at it. And then Jesus, just to answer their question or just get to the bottom of the matter, they say, wait a minute, you were making these extraordinary claims about Abraham and Abraham seeing your day. What? You're not even 50. What are you talking about? So Jesus finally just throws the gauntlet down and says, before Abraham was, I am. Now, yes, Jesus is making a claim about, hey, yeah, I've been around a long time. Certainly, he's making a claim that, oh, yeah, you think Abraham is the father of your faith, but actually, I was around before him. He's making a comment about his duration. But more than that, he is claiming the divine name for himself, right? This is a reference to Exodus chapter 3, when Moses asks God, who do I tell the children of Israel sent me, or is sending? Whom do I say I saw? God says, I am, right? Jesus is saying, that's my name. That's who I am. All right. Now, some critics of Christianity have claimed that Jesus never claimed to be divine. And we know that Jesus is often oblique in the way he refers to his identity, especially to people who are already critics. He's not gonna give them what they're asking for. But I believe this is the most evocative, most provocative claim Jesus ever made about who he was. He is saying that he is the I am, that he appeared to Moses. In fact, that he appeared to many of the patriarchs, that he is with the Father and shares that name of I am. All right. And, you know, the leadership in Jerusalem themselves would disagree with these critics because they got it. They're like, whoa, this guy is blaspheming. And what is the appropriate biblical punishment for blasphemy? Stoning. And so this is why they take up stones. So Jesus, I do believe this is the clearest declaration Jesus made about his identity. And I believe the leadership in Jerusalem understood that as well. Now, one last observation. In the ESV, it says that they took up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself. The word there actually, I think, is better translated, Jesus was hidden from them. And I think there's a significant theological point here. These leaders in Jerusalem were suppressing the truth. They were opposing the one sent by God. They were dishonoring God. And because they were dishonoring God, because they weren't receiving the messenger sent by God, they weren't receiving the Son, God gave them over to a darkened mind. I don't think so much that Jesus hid, as much as because they were suppressing the truth, they couldn't see, right? John is making a theological point here. In fact, he will go on to elaborate on this theological point when Jesus, in subsequent chapters, goes on to heal a blind man. And the leadership are all upset about this. So it's as if the leaders, they suppress the truth, they resist Jesus, they are given over to blindness, and they proceed to even further blindness, while Jesus liberates a blind man. And this blind man goes from literal blindness to not knowing who Jesus is, to coming and seeing who Jesus is, and ultimately believing in him. So this issue is not, Jesus didn't work a magic trick to become invisible, is a theological point that is going on, that resistance to the truth blinds us. And if we persist in it, we only grow in blindness. Two quick observations, comments, maybe questions that we could ask. There's a lot in here, but two that I would ask is, have we learned to so trust the Father and His goodness that we are free from the need to self-justify? Anytime we're defensive or we seek to defend our reputation and we're really agitated by that, I think we're maybe seeking glory from men. But Jesus wants to lead us into a freedom where we trust the Father to give the appropriate glory to us in the appropriate time, even if we are ultimately killed and with a bad reputation, we trust that God will one day vindicate us. I think that's the freedom that Jesus wants us to have as his disciples. And then the other thing, this thing about not seeing death. Again, in our context where there's a lot of people scared about death and scared about loved ones dying, I think it is really incumbent upon the people of God. What does Jesus say about the threat of death? Put my teachings into practice. Abide in my love. Learn to keep my word. And you will know a joy and a fellowship with me and my Father that will make death a matter of light importance to you. I don't think Jesus makes light of death, but death is not the ultimate threat that for most of human history it has been for humans. And that is part of the good news of what Jesus wants to bring to us. Amen.